Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, February the 25th. Well, it's a beautiful day here in North Texas. It's supposed to get chilly over the next 24 or 48 hours, you know, come down to the 30s. But other than that, it's just an absolutely beautiful day here in North Texas. Well, the Democrats are in the news, obviously. That's the big story. They're in the news, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But before we get there, I just got a couple of quick stories I wanted to share with you or talk about. The first one is that I don't know how many of you saw this, but Jim Acosta of CNN, he's the White House reporter at CNN. He's the one who always goes to these press conferences and tries to show up, in other words. He's always picking a fight with President Trump. And, okay, that's part of his job. I understand that. A member of the press, you're supposed to ask questions. But I think a lot of times he goes overboard. And today, I guess in India, he and President Trump had another one of their famous encounters. And I have to tell you that I'm really, really happy to see President Trump fight back, because Jim Acosta and CNN have not really been honest brokers in all of this. And I'm glad to see that President Trump fights back and he gives it right back to them. And I think a lot of reporters in that room, even though they won't publicly admit it, I bet a lot of them like to see that, because Jim Acosta is too much about him. And CNN is too much about itself. And they try to become the story. And what they do is they have these confrontations with President Trump. Then, of course, they show them all day long and so on, which is not their job. Their job is to report the news. So I am happy to see President Trump give it right back to CNN, because, for one thing, nobody watches CNN. This is another amazing thing. Less than 1 million people an hour are watching that network. I mean, they're way down on just about every measurement. But anyway, it's good to see President Trump give it right back to him. The other story that is very interesting developing is this Justice Sotomayor of the Supreme Court, who basically came out and said that the conservative judges in the Supreme Court are all basically working for President Trump or something like that, that they're very partisan in their opinions. Well, incredibly, this is coming from a woman who has written some pretty rough opinions herself. I mean, look, the fact is that Sotomayor and Ginsburg have been extremely publicly critical of the President of the United States, and that's not their job. They can have their own opinion. They can vote for whoever they want. But justices in the Supreme Court are not supposed to give political opinions. So President Trump did what any rational person would do. He says these two justices should recuse themselves from any future cases having to do with my administration. I don't know that they will, but frankly, it's not a bad idea that the president says that. I believe that a Supreme Court justice has the moral as well as legal duty to stay silent about our politics. Obviously, the justices are products of our politics in the sense that they are nominated by politicians. I get that. They're nominated by presidents. And ever since the abortion ruling, the Supreme Court has become hugely political, because a lot of justices are put there for one reason or another. And certainly on the Democrat side, Roe v. Wade is almost like a litmus test for them to get on the court. But it would be a lot better if all of the justices would simply stay out of our politics. If you don't like the president, vote against him. You can do that. But it's unfair to the American people to have Justice Ginsburg expressing opinions about President Trump and now Sotomayor expressing opinions about the conservative judges. That's not her job. If she wants to express political opinions, she ought to resign from the Supreme Court and run for the Senate in New York. And then she can be a politician giving political opinions and having to answer questions, of course, about her political views. So bad idea for justices to get involved. And I just wish that Sotomayor would stop talking. And frankly, I'm really concerned here with Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts. He should be telling these people to stop talking. You know, not long ago, Chief Justice Roberts said that we don't have Obama judges, we don't have Trump judges. Okay, that's nice of him to say that. But when you hear Sotomayor, you have to wonder if we don't really have Obama justices, because it sure sounds to me like she is, you know, acting as an Obama justice rather than a Supreme Court justice. I don't know how else to say it than that. Let's talk a little bit about these Democrats. Well, they've got a big debate coming up tonight. Big debate. And I don't know what's going to happen. Everybody keeps saying that they're all going to go after Bernie Sanders because, you know, they need to stop Bernie Sanders. Maybe. They might all go after Bloomberg. Maybe so. But first of all, is Bloomberg going to be there tonight? I don't know. I'm not sure, but I guess he probably will be. So tonight, I suppose they're all going to go after Biden because apparently he's leading in South Carolina. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting debate. Now, what I'm hoping is that the reporters will ask a few questions about the black unemployment rate, since in South Carolina, the black vote is extremely important in the black or in the Democrat primary. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow. But my guess is that a couple of them, like, Mayor Buttigieg and maybe Senator Klobuchar, who desperately need to get on the radar, maybe those two will go after Sanders. I don't know. But they probably should. They probably should if they want to get back in the game. But the big South Carolina primary is on Saturday. But I think the real key here is Super Tuesday and what's going to happen on Super Tuesday, because that's the one that I think is going to basically end this thing. If somehow Bernie Sanders can be standing strong after Super Tuesday, and I think he will, I think all the others are just going to run out of money. And all you're going to have is basically Bloomberg, who's got all the money in the world, Bernie Sanders, who has a lot of energy and money, and those two are going to be the only ones standing. I think Vice President Biden, his future is basically resting on South Carolina. If he wins South Carolina, he'll get more oxygen, and he may go beyond Super Tuesday. You never know. But these guys are running out of money. And the only three who don't have to worry about money are Bernie Sanders, who's got plenty of it, obviously Bloomberg, who's got his own fortune, and Tom Steyer, who's got his own fortune. Those are the only three who don't have to worry about money on Super or the Wednesday after Super Tuesday. All the others are, you know, they have to really do well on Saturday in the case of Joe Biden in South Carolina. And the others are going to have to do well on Super Tuesday, or this thing is over by Wednesday. When I say by over, what I'm trying to say is that come Wednesday morning, you're going to be down to basically 2-3 if you include Steyer. And that's it. It's going to be Bloomberg versus Sanders the rest of the way. And if Sanders does fairly well, he's in. I mean, he's in. It's going to be very difficult, very, very difficult to stop him when they're going down the road. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, Tuesday, February the 25th. We were just talking about the Democrats. And, of course, the biggest Democrat right now is Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders has been in the news here lately because Bernie Sanders has a past that is extremely controversial. And the past has to do with his views on socialism and his views on some left-wing dictators such as Fidel Castro, such as Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and even Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And I wrote about this at the American Thinker, and the name of the article over at the American Thinker is I think the name of the article is "Don't You Remember When We Called These People Communists?" By the way, that article is over at Babalu as well. And the amazing thing about Bernie Sanders is, first of all, what he said about Cuba was, well, you know, I support Castro because he did something about literacy. First of all, Castro didn't do anything about literacy. Cuba already had one of the highest rates of literacy in the world in 1959. Certainly the fourth highest in Latin America. Only Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay had a higher rate, and Cuba was 76%. So, I mean, Castro didn't come and take over this illiterate country that needed a big savior like him. No. The fact is that education, everybody keeps talking about free education in Cuba and literacy. It's all a big farce. The reality is that the free education in Cuba is nothing more than indoctrination. And all this stuff about literacy in Cuba, you only get to read the books they want you to read. So all this garbage about, well, you know, gee, he came in and he started a campaign of literacy. No, he didn't. The fact is that Cuba did not need that. Now, I'm not saying that there weren't pockets in Cuba where, you know, such a campaign would have been useful. Certainly in the countryside, there were some pockets. In the countryside, there were parts of Cuba where, you know, some schools and some literacy would have been welcomed. But that had nothing to do with why he came to power. The Cuban Revolution had nothing to do with economics, had nothing to do with literacy. It was all about politics, and it was the resentment of the Cuban people of the Batista dictatorship and the fact that Batista had violated the Constitution of Cuba by coming to power. I mean, that's the story. It was a political situation in Cuba. It had nothing to do with the economy or literacy or any of that. That all came later, when the revolution had to be justified so that, you know, he could gain the admiration of people like Bernie Sanders, who are basically socialist and communist. So Bernie Sanders needs to read up a little bit about Cuba. And if this comes up tonight at the debate, I hope that one of the candidates reminds Bernie Sanders that he needs to learn more about Cuban history if he's going to be going around giving opinions about Cuba. Cuba had a lot of problems. And, you know, my family was there, so we know Cuba had a lot of problems before Castro. Most of them, in fact, 90% of them were political problems. They were not literacy or economic problems. The country was actually economically speaking doing quite well. And in terms of literacy, look at the numbers of newspapers and universities and schools in Cuba and highly educated Cubans of all types that were in the island. So I don't know what Bernie Sanders is talking about. I think he's using a pretty bad excuse to defend his support of the Cuban government and the Cuban dictatorship. A couple of things on this day in history. In 1964, Muhammad Ali defeated Sonny Liston, and that was the first of his many, many heavyweight titles. And that was a quick fight, as I recall. Actually, it was a technical knockout, now that I remember reading about it. It was a technical knockout, but it was the beginning of the Muhammad Ali, story in heavyweight boxing. Without question, Muhammad Ali, if not the greatest, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. And it was on this day in 1943 that George Harrison was born. George was the youngest of the Beatles. In fact, he celebrated his 21st birthday when the group was on the Ed Sullivan Show back in February of 1964. George was only, I believe, 15 when he joined the group. He was I think Paul had known him, introduced him to John, and that's how they became the Beatles. They had a different name at that time. They were not the Beatles yet. But, you know, I think George's greatest contribution to their sound and to their music was always the great guitar that he played. He was a great guitarist, and I think that was really the contribution. Later on, of course, he did write some good songs and became well-known for his songwriting as well. But for most of the Beatles' career, George was the man who played that great guitar in all of their songs, a great lead guitarist. And that's how I remember George, sort of the quiet Beatle, the guy behind the scenes playing that great guitar. George Harrison, born on this day, 1943. He passed away in 2001. Hard to believe that was 18 years ago. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.